Welcome to Change Surfer Radio. I'm Dr. J, and I'll be your guide to a sexy high-tech vision of a radically democratic future. Speaking today with Bob Black. He's a popular anarchist writer and theorist noted for his incisive wit. Welcome, Bob Black.
Thank you.
I want to talk to you first about the types of anarchism out there. You have written quite scathingly and incisively and extremely eruditely about the different anarchist theorists that exist in the world. And where are you situated within the world of anarchist thought?
Well, maybe we should identify anarchism first, which the New York Times last year called the idea that won't go away. And it does seem to have come back. Basically, all you have to do to be an anarchist is to think that life without government is possible and desirable. Although there are actually some anarchists who probably wouldn't satisfy even that definition. Within that broad range, there are some traditional categories. There are communist anarchists who basically believe in communism without coercion, without the state, a strongly egalitarian point of view. There is anarcho-syndicalism, which believes that society should be reorganized on the basis of workers' federations, perhaps growing out of the union movement. There are individualist anarchists who are pretty difficult to define much further, since they're so individualistic. Some of them even consider themselves anarcho-capitalists, which is, complete laissez-faire, but most anarchists consider that nonsense. And some other people that probably aren't quite describable. One current that's attracting a lot of attention now is so-called primitivists, who are at least perceived to want to go back to a pre-industrial condition of society, perceived at least. Some it isn't quite clear. So those are some of the varieties that are active today.
Most people would probably situate you with the primitivists, given your positive writings about hunter-gatherers.
Well, I'd rather call myself a fellow traveler than a believer. There's a pretty interesting article in what I think is the best anarchist journal called Anarchy, a Journal of Desire Armed. No one knows what that means. By its editor, Jason McQuinn. He's got a sort of a symposium, Primitivism Pro and Con, and he wrote why I am not a primitivist, which probably would surprise some of the people who read his magazine, since it's been very open to that point of view. Maybe the only thing, I may yet come around to that point of view. I'm certainly highly critical of high technology and its social consequences, but I guess I'm most interested in primitive society for showing that life can be radically different from what it is. So it's the clear value of it to me is negative. Whether they have a reasonable positive position, I'm not quite so sure. But it's well worth thinking about.
In the 80s, one of the more popular and influential anarchist thinkers on the left has been Murray Bookchin. I know that you've had cross swords ideologically with him several times. He's the founder of a strain of social thought called social ecology,
mm-hmm.
Which has been influential in the left wing of the U.S. Greens. Do you consider social ecology a brand of anarchism?
Well, maybe not as such. I'm not sure I completely understand what social ecology is, even though in the aforementioned magazine I have a book review of a book called Social Ecology After Bookchin, which, as I point out, that's the third book about him with the word after or beyond in its title, suggesting some emergent impatience with this guy.
People are very anxious to get beyond him.
I think he'll probably be beyond pretty soon. When Bookchin was most vigorously promoting that point of view, he wasn't addressing that to anarchists. The 80s, he really kind of passed us by. He was active in the, very active in the Greens movement, and seemed that's where he wanted to place his political stamp. And I guess probably a lot of us sort of forgot about him. I myself was read and was influenced by his essays from the 60s and 70s about things like sustainable technology, critique of Marxism, a variety of things. And, well, we just sort of lost touch with him. And then he roared back into the scene 6 years ago. And it turns out apparently he's worn out his welcome with some of these Greens. And he took a look at the current anarchist scene, which is, by our standards, flourishing, and didn't like what he saw. He thinks too many of us are decadent and hedonistic and anti-progress and so on and so forth.
He's opposed to lifestyle anarchism.
That's what he calls it, a category that makes no sense to me. If you read his earlier stuff, he didn't always use lifestyle as a swear word. You know, he then spoke as if, you know, which surely is the case, you know, an anarchism that isn't about the quality of everyday life isn't worth bothering with. So, all anarchists should be lifestyle anarchists, and all anarchists should be what he calls social anarchists. And there is some resentment at him appropriating the latter term, apparently to refer exclusively to himself and his girlfriend and the four or five people who agree with him.
There's an essay that he wrote, a book that he wrote back in the 60s called Post-Scarcity Anarchism.
Yes, that's an excellent book to read. That if you read that and compare it to what he writes now, you know, you wouldn't think it was the same guy, except for the, like, poor quality of the writing.
The argument that was so popular back then was that we were in an era of automation, high technology, which was quickly going to make work increasingly unnecessary and create enough abundance for us to experiment with radically different ways of living. Is that the kind of predecessor for your own thinking about work?
It was part of it, but I have never thought of work as primarily a technological problem. I mean, I think that it's a matter of much more a matter of social organization. John Ruskin said, "Wealth is other people," and that's what I think. Classical anarchists in the 19th century were saying that also the Wobblies, the industrial workers of the world, they were calling for, they were saying that in a rational free society we could work 4 hours a day. Now, if you assume that the technology has a lot to do with that, what would it be? What would Kropotkin say today? 40 minutes? You trim it down far enough and it doesn't really make sense to call it work anymore.
So for you, work is the phrase "work" in your writing is not so much the activity itself, but it's the way that the activity is, the power relations that it's carried out, and your attitude towards the activity.
Well, I cringe a little at the last part because that has a, no offense offended, a vaguely New Age sap sort of.
Like Schumacher said that we should all treat work like meditation, and then everything would be fine.
But he also had, a definite, some ideas about how work should be changed.
Right.
So simple an idea as, your work should be based on some sort of a concept of value. So he has an essay, for instance, called Buddhist Economics.
Right.
If you organize the work of a society according to the principles of Buddhism, what would you get? You'd get, something, substantially different from the way work is conducted now. And although I'm not a Buddhist, the idea that simply, why are we working? And what do we want out of it? Just to think in those terms begins to get you away from work as we know it. Now, I don't know, you suggested that. So, the way I think of work is, in the negative sense that I, you know, like to write about it, is a sort of forced labor. There are two things I don't like about it, basically. One is that it's, you know, compelled by, you know, either the, you know, the economic carrot or the political stick. And the other is that it's not something you do for its own satisfaction, but something that you get something out of, like a wage or what have you. So obviously it'd be insane for me to be against production or creation, and I'm not. But work isn't the only source of production or creation, as any gardener will confirm for you. So I'd like to see productive activity changed so as to be its own source of satisfaction. And this, you know, has something to do with the specific activity, and has something to do with how the social organization of it, the company, perhaps the variety of it. But that's kind of to go off on a special topic of mine. I think there's a lot of interest among anarchists in the transformation of work, even amongst the more traditional, as we call, workerist varieties, who are perhaps on the defensive a little bit about defending it at all. But
you mentioned that a lot of Marxists come out of a lot of anarchists rather come out of Marxist backgrounds, and so the workerism, the economism, the focus on technology, that strain of anarchism is more Marxist.
Yeah, that's I think substantially a recent development. Although Murray Bookchin was a Marxist in the 30s, and seems to be one again these days. But with the collapse of communism and general discredit of leftism outside academia, anyway, this has left a lot of political activists kind of without a home. And some of them, cynically, and some of them just naturally, are coming over to anarchism and not quite realizing that there is more difference between their old ideology and their new one than some of them appreciate. So I think that's happening now. Personally, I tend to find that the anarchists I find most congenial are those who haven't come out of a left-wing activist background, who occasionally they come out of the right wing. But mostly they just emerge out of, the general apathy.
Not liking things the way they are.
And I find that there's an appeal for such people as hopeful, because even if every ex-Marxist, you know, in the country becomes an anarchist, there still won't be very many of them. And I definitely think this point of view has something to offer to, a lot of other people.
I'm speaking today with Bob Black. He's a popular anarchist writer and theorist and the author of a very influential essay called The Abolition of Work. Now, when I did a web search on The Abolition of Work, I found 450 web links to it. This is probably your most influential piece I did.
It would seem so. Yes, it would seem so.
Yeah. And when did you write that?
I wrote that in the summer of 1985. I was deeply in love, and that influenced the tone of it, I think. Most people don't associate love with a lot of my writings.
Extremely erudite, well-read and erudite, I must say. You have a very well-educated background.
Oh, yes, I'm overqualified for just about every possible job. That's how I've abolished work.
And so the Abolition of Work essay argues a number of different points.
Yeah, I can't really soundbite it, the thesis, that well. Uh-huh. I've tried. It isn't all that complicated, the argument, but I don't like to be solely associated with that. I mean, I didn't make that up, for one thing. Drew that together from a number of sources, and some of the classical anarchists aren't too far from an explicit anti-work or zero-work position. The utopian socialist Charles Fourier is particularly close, and although he's really weird, I recommend people read his stuff, because he put his finger on the problem and calls for, in his phrase, attractive labor. Mm-hmm. And discusses, how long to work, what sorts of things to do, what sorts of people might be drawn to some activities rather than others. And it's all very inventive, and if it's in times fantastic, that's fun too.
One of the points that you look into is the anthropology of paleo work, or what some of our hunter-gatherer ancestors must have done, and you argue the case, as other anthropologists have, that our ancestors didn't work very much.
No, and what we call work, we might just as easily call play, because, the anthropologists who studied contemporary hunter-gatherers, such as the San or Bushman, find that life was not nasty, brutish, and short. It's a little short, but it isn't nasty or brutish. And, maybe 3-4 hours a day is typical. And there are days when nobody leaves the camp at all. And the work itself, one of the things Marshall Salins, the anthropologist, pointed out is, like, in gathering, in foraging societies, if you want to call them that, all labor, if you want to call it that, is skilled labor. Meaning that all labor has an element of satisfaction. Things like hunting involves a kind of expertise in understanding the landscape and the use of your tools and weapons and so forth. So I relied quite a bit on that, and I've returned to that in the last few years. Not again necessarily because we want to copy that form of life. I mean, almost by definition, it isn't something you can just go out in the garden or the desert and do. I mean, it's embedded in a way of life. But the demonstration that life can be so different, these people don't worry about where their next meal is coming from. They don't seem to experience the anxiety that even rich people do in our society, and they don't seem to have there's no high blood pressure amongst these sorts of people.
One of the problematics that I grapple with in this show is that a lot of progressives have an anti-technological bias or a Luddite instinct, and don't look for utopian possibilities in current technology. So I guess one of the things I wanted to have you reflect on is, given your enormous amount of attention to the subject, don't you think that the way towards less work is through this post-industrial automation and a political revolution that would have to accompany that to make life more equal and to redistribute unemployment, as it were, the kind of ideas that Gortz has proposed, for instance, rather than simply to be opposed to technology and have a neo-pastoral vision?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm very skeptical about high technology, and so one of the frustrations I've experienced as I debate or, dialogue with anarchists and other people is that I would really like someone who understands high technology with its social dimension to seriously talk to me about, as we experience the world of high tech now, it's not reducing labor. That isn't what's happened. When is it going to start? How productive do we have to get? Or if we multiply our productivity by 50%, will they just, raise the quota for work by that much? We work longer hours in this country than we did in 1950. And I have to assume the productivity increase in that time was, at least 50%. I mean, so why not 20 hours?
Well, one of the answers to that is that our leisure has been commodified. So increasingly we have to pay to have fun when we're not working for activities that then require us to do more work.
Well, that's true too, and I've talked about leisure, maybe not as much as I might. I don't think of leisure as the opposite of work isn't leisure. I think the opposite or the contrary is play. Leisure is non-work, as I put it, for the sake of work. It's to recover from work, and sometimes it's hard to tell it apart from work. I can grant that, but still, even if we're just talking about work per se, the kind that's counted by the hour, there's actually more of it. And and then of course, as you say, there's the rest of your waking hours are largely colonized by so-called leisure activities, which are involve the same kind of passivity and lack of creativity that work itself usually does. So I'd agree with that, but how would that change what leftists, and including the traditional anarchists, say is, well, if we abolish capitalism, we won't be no surplus value for the bosses, and if we are the bosses and self-manage our work, we'll reduce it and change it to as far as we can. But they say, well, we can never do away with it. I disagree. I really don't see why we can't go all the way. If we're really radical in our analysis and kind of ruthless about, what's really worth doing. But I can't guarantee that, what I call the abolition of work, which some people might call something else, transformation of work. Can it be carried all the way? I can't offer any guarantees, but I think that's definitely the way to go. And when was the last time you heard a presidential candidate talking about that?
Well, what's the transition?
Even Ralph Nader doesn't talk about that.
No, he doesn't.
But he's a workaholic, if I ever saw one.
Exactly. Well, what's the transitional program? I mean, I know that there are some anti-work leftists who argue, for instance, that increasing the cost of labor by, for instance, raising the minimum wage would encourage more automation and would eliminate certain low-wage jobs. And if accompanied by expansion of social welfare, job retraining, or whatever, I know that all those things are anathema to you, but because you don't want people to be retrained for jobs, you want people to resist jobs. But is there a transitional program someplace, a set of policies that could be pursued that would encourage the playful attitude that you look for?
Well, it's hard to imagine a policy implies politics, and in a first place, it's hard to imagine this. This sort of scenario you're sketching might be thinkable in Europe, where they have a tradition of social democracy, and where they're not as Calvinistic about work as we still are. I mean, it's hard for me to imagine. It's easier for me to imagine something more radical happening than to imagine evolutionary development away from work. You probably may have read Jeremy Rifkin's book,
right?
The End of Work. You may be thinking of something like that.
Right.
And these are just two policymakers and most people, policies for the gradual reduction of work and the reduction of the ranks of the working class and so forth. I mean, they're as unthinkable as my utopian nonsense to them.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd just as soon engage in utopian nonsense. It's more fun.
Have you engaged in any of the anti-globalization stuff that's going on? You mentioned that there's been a huge growth of anarchism with the anti-globalization movement, and a lot of it seems to be of the kind of neo-primitivist comprehensive resistance that you would be resonant with.
Well, personally, I don't know. I'm too old to beat up police. The anarchists have made headlines by their part in this anti-globalization movement, And generally, I'm pretty sympathetic to that. Some of those people are the kind of people who read my books. I went to Syracuse a few months ago and hooked up with the local scene there. And some people say that, some of these anti-globalization people, they're just slogans, you know, they don't. Whereas my impression is I haven't met anybody who's very interested in that sort of activity who didn't know a lot more about international economics than, say, Tom Brokaw when he isn't gibbering about the greatest generation.
Now, you have in the past said that you didn't have a computer and you weren't terribly interested in computers, but now you have at least a website. I don't know if you're maintaining it or someone's maintaining it.
No, I've had a computer for about 7 years now.
Okay, good.
They were gifts. I don't maintain that. Rodney E. Griffith maintains that website, and I'm glad he does.
That's at www.t0.or.at/BobBlack/.
I'll have to take your word for it.
Okay.
I didn't commit it to memory, but... are you about to ask me if this is hypocritical?
No, not at all. No, not at all.
That's one of the usual trite questions.
No, I was going to ask you if your own popularity and visibility has increased, because most of your writings had been for relatively obscure anarchist presses, but with the advent of the Internet, probably you've gotten a lot more hits and a lot more calls than you would have before.
I'm actually taking a course now to try to find out a little bit more about, because I'm sure I can do more with the thing. But especially since most of my books are out of print, I have to assume that a lot of people are getting in contact with, you know, my writings and ideas through the Internet, which is fine with me. I sometimes read, you know, things which don't mention me or anything, but where, I don't know, some of the things I've talked about, like critique of leftism, critique of work, are almost taken for granted. And, ideas that weren't, you know, when I, 25 years ago, which I think was when I started to really look into this anarchy stuff, those were novel and controversial. Now they are, if not the mainstream, they are the mental equipment of the contemporary anarchist, I think, you know, whether they agree or disagree. So discussions that take place among anarchists which have no counterparts in the mainstream media or even the leftist media. Some of the tritest, discussions I've seen of some of these issues in the anarchist press, surpass what I'd get if Dan Brokaw got me on the horn. I mean, I shouldn't keep mentioning him because everybody knows he's a moron, but I don't know, somebody who's like semi-smart would probably use up all their time on cliches. We'll all starve to death, this and that.
I want to recommend that people really read The Abolition of Work in your other essays. I have links from our website to your website and to some of your writing. I've been speaking today with Bob Black. He's a popular anarchist writer and theorist, noted for his incisive wit, and you can find his works at www.t0.or.t/BobBlack. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Change Surfer Radio. Change Surfer Radio is produced at WHUS FM at the University of Connecticut in Storrs. If you want to learn more about democratic transhumanism, or you want to share your thoughts about this show with me, Dr. J, email me at jhughes, that's jhughes, at changesurfer.com. You can also check out past and future shows, archived in streaming MP3, and myriad relevant links at the website www.changesurfer.com.